I think the most important metric is probably to look at yield optimization. It's revenue per visit. It's like, I'm making this much money for this person.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factory. Today, as a guest, we have Nick Kaplan, that is the Chief Growth and Innovation Officer at the Sadia Group. If you're enjoying our episode so far, I wanted to invite you to leave a review and ratings on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you so much and enjoy the show. Hey, Nick, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm amazing. How are you doing?
It's good. It's good. You know, it's today I'm recording different podcast episodes altogether. So it's, you know, it's between works and different things to do and then, you know, recording, and it's busy. It's busy, but I cannot complain about it. You know,
I don't think that's life today. So I think that'll probably weave its way in and out of our conversation about changing gears quite a bit. So, but thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Absolutely. You know, we're going to talk about, you know, best practices, you know, on the brand side, you know, when it comes to not only like, of course, on the fashion side, but, you know, what is happening now, what was happening before, what is the future of things. We're going to go through like, you know, traditional paid ads versus like, you know, influencer content and so on. But first off, like, who is Nick? Can you tell a bit more about yourself, about your career and what you're, you know, working right now on?
Man, this could take the whole podcast, so I'll try to be the same. So I'm a person who has really grown up in the business. I actually like literally grew up in it. My great-grandmother was Lane Bryant, who herself was probably, you know, as an early turn of the century plus size starter, right? She began the plus size industry in the early 1900s and kind of went all the way up through into my existence, and went to school and worked at Saks after school and got the bug for fashion and the business side of it, and then have grown up into the world of digital where I am today now, having started a brand with my brother in the early 2000s, still with that brand, although at a bigger portfolio company at Sadia Group, where I lead all of our growth, our innovation, and most importantly, our strategy. So that's kind of a bit about me. I live in New York and I love to really focus on what's next. I mean, that's my passion inside the business, about this super interesting time where we're talking about commerce, media, how the two are coming together even more so, generative AI, and lots of topics. But fortunate for me, they kind of all cross my plate.
And how do you get like updated on things? Is it mostly like reading online, is watching videos, is it talking with people? Like what is your approach usually to be in the innovation center and be like, you know what, this is the present, this is going to be the future?
It's actually like a super interesting question. And I have to talk to a lot of people and do things like this, and no one actually really ever asks that question. And I think that it's really about kind of like taking a cross section of what's readily available. I think LinkedIn and following people on, you know, who's writing, to, you know, looking at the news, where I think so much of it's now kind of predictive and customized to you. So Google, if you look at Google News, instead of putting these things, so, you know, what did Shopify just do, or like a different platform, to the people whom you sort of choose to engage with outside of the building. And I'm really always talking to the younger people about them building their brands. You know, I think that one thing I'd really advise to people would be to, you know, be in conferences or be inside of like groups like Commerce Next or Rethink Retail, go to Shop Talk, and really be out there, because it's never like, oh, I'm just going to go to this source, like a dictionary, and look up innovation and get it. But I am going to sort of take a confluence of data and like distill that down to like, oh, I actually don't believe in the metaverse. So I do actually believe in generative AI. So I'd say it's a combination of like reading, lots of observation, and much conversation.
It makes sense, right? Many times no one really knows what is going to happen, but only meeting with other people, doing brainstorming, sharing knowledge, right? It can help, right? Because what you can read online is not everything, right? Many times you have only access to certain information, maybe the circle of people, right? Then you have to meet in person sometimes, right? Or hear them maybe talking in a webinar or in person, as you said, like Shop Talk and many other events, right? I guess so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that it's where you get your greatest ideas. And to me, who likes to write, not as much as I should, but does like to share their opinions. You know, I think that I once wrote something about, like, all innovation is responsible courage. And so I think, you know, we think about sort of probabilities and incrementality. You know, I don't think that there's anything that's so game-changing that it's going to change the trajectory of a business or kind of the reinvent the wheel. So it's like finding different opportunities to leverage to be better and to improve and evolve. I mean, that all is what innovation is, because stagnation, which is sort of the inverse, is death. And, you know, I just did a panel last week, and we were talking about reviews as user-generated content, right? And I think it's, yeah, you know, vis-a-vis this conversation, I never really thought about reviews as user-generated content. I thought about influencers and media and really video being more user-generated content. And then I really got to thinking. And then I was like, wait, is there a way that we could take a math equation and turn that into, like, a generative piece of a review, which is to say, like, if a review is looked at 10,000 times, versus the number of times a person looked at the product times the review. Like, so I think that's how you sort of innovate, right? It's like, and that wasn't me. That was like someone on the panel was talking and I was like, wait a minute. And then we started talking about it on the panel. So I really think that it's like, you never know if you're not out there and you're not talking, you're not reading, you're not learning, you're not evolving. And then again, going back to that stagnation comment, you're effectively stuck in place, which in this environment, what the world is becoming, you're dead.
100%. I like when you say about the reviews, like, they are very important. That's why some apps are trying to really maximize on video reviews, for example, from normal customers. I'm not talking about influencers. I'm not talking about content creators. Typical customers that can show you just the real product, how it works and so on. And it happens even to me sometimes. I go on Amazon and I go and watch the videos. I also wanted to ask you that many times it's not about a product, but it's about the emotional investment, right, in it, in a brand. Specifically, like, you know, these days, it's crucial, right, that you can tell a story behind something, behind the brand, behind this, behind the product. What are, in your opinion, some of the best practices on the brand side to really master, right, the storytelling and, the again, the emotional investment when it comes to, you know, talking with customers?
It's super expensive and increasingly difficult to connect with customers and convert them to shoppers, to buyers. And so I'd say that you have to sort of be, one, really consistent. You have to sort of have a mission, have a purpose, have a reason, and build an internal culture that sort of permutates into, like, the outside world, right? And then two, I think that you have to sort of really work less transactionally and more authentically in that whole kind of field of dreams mentality, right? It's like, if you build it, they'll come. And if you build your brand, if you build your brand ethos, if you build your connection with your consumer, then you'll connect with your consumer. And it's interesting. We did some work way back, I don't know, a year and a half ago, which now that's like way back, right? Way back used to be like 10 years ago, but year ago is like forever. And we were talking to a company that was, like, testing some stuff with us, and they were doing some really cool stuff with surveying consumers and getting insights from that. And they shared with us that the number one reason that customer makes a purchase is price, right? That's pretty given. It's a big factor. But what kind of surprised me, but it was, like, super obvious, was the number two factor, trust. So trust is not given. It's not taken. It's earned. And so I feel like, to answer your question, it's about doing things that are allowing your consumer, they don't have to like you, right? They don't have to, you know, always want to be with you, but they have to trust you and they have to know they can rely on you. And so that, and it's a word I don't love anymore because it's so overused, but authenticity, you know, and transparency and, you know, knowing that when something happens, you're going to do the right thing. And when something happens, that they're going to, you're going to be there for them. And how you sort of personify yourself, how you talk to that outside consumer, how you create email or the influencers, individuals that you work with, those are the people at the customer level or the mega influencer or celebrity level that are going to be associated with your brand, as well as the models that you choose, the clothes or the services that you're providing or making, et cetera. So I think it's like about that equation of a purpose that isn't like about mission in terms of like, I'm going to save the world. It's about, I'm going to create your world and be there for you and go on a journey with you that hopefully lasts for 12 months, one day.
Is your brand ready to amplify its reach? Well, the Influencer Marketing Factory is here for you. We are a global influencer marketing agency helping brands ignite their growth. From influencer identification to campaign strategy, handling legalities and agreements, to managing shipping and logistics, we got you all covered. We work with hundreds of brands across different verticals, from Fortune 500 companies to direct-to-consumer brands. And we don't just stop there. With detailed ROI analysis, we help brands like yours measure success, transforming impressions into conversions. You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or just searching The Influencer Marketing Factory on Google.
Exactly. Having a message / goal objective plus trust, right? Brings me to my mind that many brands are creating communities, right? So a place where many people with the same, you know, values, the same, or they're feeling part of the same group, you know, for different reasons, they get together, right? And sometimes a brand make their own communities. Sometimes communities, they spontaneously like just get made, like, you know, they become a thing because maybe one person, you know, on Facebook or on Instagram or whatever, you know, WhatsApp group or anything like that, they create groups and communities. So again, different from an audience, right? So an audience is just usually passive. They just listen in and that's about it. A community is one active, right? Where they communicate with each other, they give feedbacks maybe to the brand and so on. It's absolutely difficult and takes a lot of effort, right? For a brand perspective to create a strong community, especially in the retention, right? That can stay there for years. Do you have any tips, best practices when it comes to create an audience, sorry, a community on like directly from the brand side?
I'd say that, look, there's a playbook in growth about how you sort of, you know, acquire customers and earn customers and then effectively and hopefully effectively own customers, right? If you can do all three well, then you can sort of spin up a database of people, which would be the equivalent of a community. I think the super interesting thing about communities, and I think you sort of said Facebook, right? I was talking to someone yesterday and they were like poo-pooing Facebook as it's irrelevant, you know, and we're talking about young people, and they're talking about how, you know, Snapchat and others, sort of how people communicate now. But I do think that there's something about those Facebook groups and like the power that they have, to your point about like strength in numbers and trust, and like looking at, you know, going back to reviews for a second, if something has like 10 or 20 or even 50 reviews, I'm like, that's not for me, right? But like if something has 5,000 reviews, I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. And you really can't today buy that. And I know Amazon is doing a lot to sort of advance that with, like, you know, like publishing kind of summaries of reviews, and to your point about video reviews and how you're sort of thinking it through. But how you build a community, it's not difficult, but it's impossible, right? In the sense of like strategically, it's about focus, about execution, right? An idea is just an idea until it's executed. And so you may have 50 ideas, but if you can't execute any of them, it doesn't make a difference. And so your idea about making a brand new way of like a whiteboard and new pens for a whiteboard and ideas and like making it sort of, you know, like virtual, it may be wonderful, but if you can't communicate out to a group of people what it does, why it solves a problem for you and how it sort of fits into what you and your life are, then you're never going to be able to build a community. So it's part about like having the product. It's part about communicating and executing a strategy that gets it into the hands. And like, it's also part luck. I think that there is this whole notion, you know, I'm reading a book now called The Power of Habit, which is a great book. And last night I was talking about Rosa Parks, and like, when Rosa Parks sat on the bus in Montgomery, like, I mean, 15 other people had done it before her. It just was like the right time and the right place, the right level of political environment. It just went where it was. So it's a lot of that. Like, it's about doing the right thing, which she did, doing it in a way that's effective, which she did, and then gaining the momentum to get the movement going that she did, And so it's like being really good at what you do and being really authentic and committed and not constantly having a new idea and bobbing and weaving and saying, oh, this is it, this is it. It's like staying focused and executing.
I get it. You know, for 100 stories, 99 might be even maybe successful, but you don't even hear about them. And then there is the one, right? And doesn't mean that the 99 did something different or wrong. And just as you correctly said, maybe the right place, the right time, with the right, you know, whatever it's going to be, and just all the planets aligned well. And again, you know, we saw it like many brands are doing basically the same things, but one became, you know, more famous than another. Is it because they were better or wrong? Maybe not. Maybe it was luck, as you said, right? And it was a combination of different things, but absolutely with consistency. And let's go. So if on the one side we have communities that usually are created by, again, customers and people that are not necessarily influencers or content creators. So on the other side, we do have instead professional people that do it for a living. And I wanted to ask you this. Since there are so many influencers nowadays, right, they are on multiple different social media, how do you identify the right ones to bet on? And also, how do you bet specifically on those that are not necessarily big yet, but they could be tomorrow?
So I think to answer your question, you know, thinking about like kind of how do we identify those people? I mean, I think they have brands, we have brands, right? What's the overlay of the two? It requires research. I mean, there's definitely human resources devoted to that. Mm. There's real thought put into it. And I think that it sort of serves multiple purposes, right? Again, it's not just commerce. It's customer acquisition. It's content creation and distribution. And it's brand building for us. And I think they think about it the same way too. But it's not a model where it's just like, we're going to cast a super wide net and like go to a bunch of different people. I think we're thinking about like making a few selective bets, but betting nonetheless. And we've over the years, right, with New York and Company especially, had a lot of experience with like celebrities. So we had, when we were there, before it was sold, we had Eva Mendes and Gabrielle Union, Kate Hudson, and like two of those, I will not say which, but two of those were incredibly successful and one was not. I mean, one was really unsuccessful. And I think that goes to like, how does a person connect with their community? Just because someone has 10 million Instagram followers or 21 million Instagram followers, it doesn't make them right. And, you know, I think that you look at e-scores, you look at all the different things that roll in at that level, you look at how and who people work with. And so again, I think it's a lot of research. I think it's costs. Costs can be prohibitive sometimes. I think the markets have really fluctuated to make it more on the creator side versus the brand side. There's a lot more power there, so they can command more. And then I think it's about what you're trying to achieve. So if you're trying to sell something specific or you're trying to create content or like what your objective is, and I think all that factors into then who we potentially would work with. But I do think that, you know, and again, I think not getting ahead of ourselves, and what I'm assuming you're going to ask me at some point is like, it's not that's diminishing, that's dwindling, I think, on some level. And in terms of it's like Google and Facebook, right? They're prohibitively expensive now. Yeah. For normal brands. For the big brands, they can play there, and that's made it quite expensive for the little brands. So now we're always thinking about how are we as a brand, as a company that has 14 brands that treats itself as a small thinker in terms of big opportunity, how are we identifying what's next?
And, you know, you said that, you know, a couple of people were successful, one was not. So on that, I wanted also to ask you something that is very crucial nowadays, right? Compared to 2010, right, when you said, you know, a few things with influencers, it was definitely a different environment. There was no tracking in place. It was basically based on, you know, a lot of vanity metrics and just guessing numbers. But nowadays, of course, you know, brands, marketers, they want to see an ROI on campaigns. So you said, you know, a couple of people were successful, one not. So again, tracking is very important. What is the attribution model that usually you prefer using when it comes to influencers? Is it the first click, is the last click, is a multi-touch? Does it depend on the type of campaign? What is usually the approach there?
So one of the things I love talking about is data. And most importantly, the application of data. And I think that there are plenty of companies that have the resources to be very sophisticated about attribution, and it's a huge opportunity and a huge challenge. And you know, really interesting timing that we're talking today with, you know, 25 days now into GA4, which has definitely made a really significant impact in the world and made it challenging. So the answer to your question is it's a combination of first and last click, right? We don't have multi-touch. We use more incrementality testing, which is specific. And however, there are really great platforms that offer the multi-touch. I think that I try to take a little bit more of a holistic approach, which is less defined in the sense of ROAS or the incrementality of an initiative with an influencer, right? So I think, again, there's one sort of metric that I look at each week inside of all the businesses or projects that I work on is customer file. So there's kind of call it three types of customers in a customer file. There's new customers, there's existing customers, and there's lapsed customers. Really, at the end of the day, all I care about is, does our total trailing 12-month customer file grow? Which is the number of people making purchases going up? And so if that's happening, then I know that the media mix that we're using is working. I would gladly, and I think it's far easier, quite frankly, when you're sort of working in this new creator economy and really sponsoring peer-to-peer type selling, I'd rather just offer someone and say, hey, Alessandro, I made 1,000 units of this pant. I really need you to get behind it. And I want you to make content and sell it and give you the incentive. And I just will give you a percentage of everything, whether I sell it or you sell it. I think that's sort of where we're leaning, is that we've yet to see anybody create something that really puts a UTM parameter. And by the way, the next iteration of iOS, right, is taking that away.
Yeah.
So already something that's really painful and labor intensive is going to become worse and worse. So I'd say the simple answer is a first and last click comparison. We have here some resources that we're able to use to do some more sophisticated things in terms of human resources, not tools themselves. But I would say to anyone listening that was maybe looking for advice, it'd be pick one, go with it. And again, measure on the overall lift in your business, in whether it's conversion, traffic, new to file, or total file growth.
Are there any other metrics that you think that are not usually tracked and that they should be? So apart, of course, from the typical ones, so let's move the money metrics for a second. Of course, the conversion rate, the CTR, the different, CPC, CPI, CPM, everything like that. Is there anything specific that you saw so far, in your career that too many marketers, maybe they were not focusing on and you think they should be crucial?
I love Gemray. I have a kind of a unique skill set, right? I grew up as a merchant, so I understand, my kids are always what are you doing? I walk in store, touch product, and I gotta make it. So then I grew up, and from there I went into being a digital person. And from there I went into being an e-com and a data person. So for me, I've always kind of thought about, return on invested capital, right? With everything. So I think that we need to look at not just ROAS. I think ROAS is very limiting, or iROAS. I think that if someone wants to really think holistically and be advanced, then they want to look at, gross margin return on investment, or they want to factor in the returns that we're getting on our inventory as it relates to the investments we're making in our customer acquisition. So I think that things like yields, revenue per visit, is an interesting metric that's really important, which is revenue per session by channel. I think that, far too many people don't, which is not hard, break out metrics by channel. So it's I want to see email. I want to see performance marketing. I want to see affiliate marketing. I want to see, so I'd say that focusing there, but if you really want to keep it simple, I think the most important metric is probably to look at yield optimization. It's revenue per visit. It's I'm making this much money for this person. And then I think that, obviously thinking about your CAC, and I hate CAC to LTV because I don't know. If you Google LTV definition, you'll get 100 different definitions. And by the way, as the world of digital proliferates and people are more comfortable shopping on their smart devices, whatever it is they need something, and visual search becomes more an everyday part of our life, there is no loyalty. I think it's waning. I think that goes then back to our original conversation, which is the emotional connection, the trust that they go to you before they go to someone else, so that you're doing something that's somewhat connected, because very little certainly in fashion, very little is defensible. Very little has a moat built around it. I think that that then goes back to like, how long are you keeping a customer for? Mm-hmm. What's the longevity? How many times are they visiting? Those are in really important metrics too, but more standard.
Absolutely. You know, I like when you said also looking at different revenues by channels, you know, too many times, you know, we look at just, you know, maybe, I would say that sometimes we don't look at the quality, right, also of revenue coming from channels. And this made me think also like, you know, that one of the things that I think is one of the maybe most interesting, if you really want to go in detail, it is to actually look at each different influencer and see also like their audience, right? What is the average, right, spending, right? Because that can also help you a lot, right, when it comes to, okay, we know more or less the demographics, we know some information about the audience, but it's very difficult to know how much they're going to spend, right? So if you actually look at each maybe influencer, I don't know if you've ever done anything like that, or what do you think?
Yeah,
is it doable?
Sure.
Is it too difficult? Is it like too complex to manage? Or do you think that brands should also look at the, you know, granularity of each different influencer and also their type of audience and how much they're spending averagely?
Totally agree with you. I think it's a really salient point. Not all influencers are created equal and not all influencers have the same impact. And so I think if you were to say, I have, you know, $10,000 to spend and I'm going to go out and I'm going to spend it on, you know, Google shopping, right? It's going to cost me 20 cents per click. I'm going to get X amount of clicks. And then to go back to performance by channel, I should know, give or take, right? Like what my conversion will be and what my AOV will be, and then I'll get my return. And I think that that's like super transactional. I think the interesting part on the influencer side is like, I could go out and give that money to an influencer. And, you know, I'll go back to some of the things we used to do at Fashion to Figure. And, you know, as a sort of an early trend setting plus size brand, you know, influencer is really critical part of the strategy, because in this point, when we were doing collaborations with people before, it was really big, you know, in like 2016, 2017, it was both to like drive revenue, but it was to build brand awareness and gain customers. And so I could take that 10,000, give it to the influencer, create content, distribute the content, sell the product. And so it was really interesting, because what we used to do was look at the basket, right? It's like the collections they created would have anywhere from like 12 to 24 styles, right? Was what they were buying only their styles, or were they buying a mixture of Fashion to Figure product and the influencer product? And then what we did is we would follow them afterwards, right? We'd say, okay, if Nick bought, you know, all influencer product and Alessandro bought both, like, did Nick ever come back again? Did Alessandro ever come back again? And so it was interesting to see how they performed. And there were definitely some that was like, they came for that person. Like, that's it. Like, we never saw them again. And there were some that like were really, really impactful. We leaned then further into that person because we knew that anytime they did something, it would have a meaningful halo. And as it became part of our mix, it was really, you know, it was like a line item in our budget. It was like, we're going to do these things with this person. Now, of course, it's changed a lot over time as it's become more sort of common to see these collaborations, and they have to be really differentiated and important because everyone does them. But I'd say, again, like less collaborative and more sort of about measuring with some, you know, sort of like accuracy when an influencer does something, how they do something, trying to track it with some kind of UTM parameter, and getting them to sort of engage there too. But I'd say that you really do need to track it, because you can't just have this, like, especially like all the, you know, SMBs and like mid-sized businesses, where if you're like above a $50 million business, it's kind of different than if you're below a $50 million business as to where you're allocating funds. And I think it really matters for everybody, but more so on the smaller side, because you've got to build a base, right? So you have to measure it by really looking at some available data that your platform, whether it's like inside of Shopify or whatever e-commerce platform, or there's really great tools that are readily available that give you those insights to help you kind of make predictive or, you know, sort of fact-based decisions or data-based decisions?
Still on these, you know, since we're talking about integrations, you know, and influencers and, you know, buying things online and tracking everything, one of the things that, theoretically speaking, right, should work the best on these, it's basically social commerce, right? So for people listening, might not be familiar with that, it's just basically selling inside the app without leaving the app, right? During, like, you know, maybe you're watching a video, there is a tag on the product, you add to cart, all the information already there, so frictionless, smooth operation there. You can finalize the purchase, you get your notification, and you continue scrolling on your Instagram, TikTok, whatever. TikTok Shops is just now working finally in the US after experimenting in the UK, but still we're not like, it's not like China, it's not like Indonesia, it's not like other countries, right? Why is that? Is it technically issues? Is it about the mindset of people? Is it about different in culture? Why we're not there yet?
We could probably do a whole separate conversation just on this one topic. But I would consider myself a smart person because I know what I don't know. I have tons of theories on this topic and I'll share some now, but I don't know that it's something that we really do know. And I think, you know, if you look at China, where while, and I'm obsessed with shoppable content, I'm not as obsessed with live shopping, and we'll talk a bit about it, I assume, right? But like the ability to go back to what you said about video review, which is what that is, right? It's someone telling you something that they believe in and or give you the selling points on that differentiates it from a static sort of set of like main image, alternative, alternative, alternative. And so I think that in China, where one of the early stats I heard was like about a makeup influencer that sold like 1.2, right? Yeah. 1.2 or $1.6 billion of lipstick in 24 hours, right?
Yes.
Exactly. And then I did a panel like at Shop Talk a couple years ago with someone from Clinique who talked about like the virality of one of their products online too. And I was just like, gosh, it's just crazy. But I think in China is just culturally different in the sense of like the digital wallet plays like a far bigger role, right? So like the way in which commerce happens. And I would have thought that it would have caught on more here, to be honest. I'm like a little bit intrigued that we are so obsessed with QVC and HSN, right? It was like such a big part of our culture that, and it was so successful for so long that we haven't really gravitated towards the medium of shoppable and live. And I think that that's probably driven by, you know, you said frictionless. I think it's probably still fraught with friction. I don't know that anyone does it right. And I'm like advising someone whom I think has actually done it right. And I think that they'll have a wonderful product coming to market soon. But I think it's tough. I mean, I think that we don't have on our phones, like they're not huge, right? They're smart devices. I think it's like not, it's great to like watch a YouTube video or a TikTok or even Netflix. I don't know that it's so great to see the specifics or get comfortable with shopping. And I think that it's going to take us more time, but I think we'll get there. I do. I mean, I think that we'll figure out a better way to gamify it and make it more kind of seamless. And I think that visual search and having these like walls of commerce broken down to be able to conduct commerce wherever you are. Like I could look at your shirt, like right now I could take a screenshot, then I could go out and like search for it and just buy it and just add it to cart. And that, I think as that kind of continues moving forward, we'll see a much higher comfort level with the sort of like talk show shopping experience of social commerce, which I'm shocked to still use that expression. It's been around. They keep using it.
Do you think that in this sort of like fight to, you know, getting more people buying, do you think that the winner of it is going to be an app, like a dedicated app, or is going to be actually one of the social media out there that's going to implement the purchase feature?
It's going to be a combination of the two, right? I don't think it's going to be, you know, you have apps like Firework, right? You have people out there that are sort of like app-based offering in partnership with brands, like the ability to sell. And then you have TikTok and Meta, Pinterest, like people trying to capitalize it too. I think it's probably going to be something like some video-based platform that you're able to like literally just like freeze and add to cart, and there'll be a comfort. So I don't think it's going to be either one of the current sort of iterations that are there. I think that in the short term, it'll be more app-based. Like, I don't think it'll be shopping on the brand sites. And then I think in the longer, it's going to be something that's sort of a hybrid of the two, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No.
Something that's not yet, like, in somebody's on production yet. Something that's going to be, like, really fluid, easy. I think Americans need easy. Like, people in the United States, it has to be easy. I don't want to work for it. I just want it. It's like, I just want it. Like, had the cart.
Yeah, no. Yes, so. My only feedback on that is that, you know, you access social media every day. You don't access necessarily Amazon every day, for example, right? That's why I think that the retention, right? And or maybe like maybe if they get a bit more like on there.
But I think that's an interesting, that's an interesting point, right? Because I access social media to kill time, and I do it at times when I'm not like, I may be stimulated to buy
something to buy it.
And I may actually buy it. Exactly. When I want to buy something, I'm going to Amazon because I know Amazon. It's like literally, I'm going to go on Amazon like before the night's over, you know, to buy something because we're going somewhere and I want it to be there when we get there. So like, I'm going to where it's known. I'm going to where it's easy. And again, I think that that's like part of it. But that's why I think it goes back to like the... If the social media kind of gets it right in terms of like the checkout and the add to cart piece and like can get it from where you are, which is like spinning through videos, or if the apps can add that feature to their site, which I've talked to a bunch of people about, it's like not that hard, right? To gain, like to just make your site have the video reviews, but like no one seems to be able to get it. So I'm saying I think someone's going to take both. Mm-hmm. And like bring them together. So it's not like I'm spending an hour looking at a video on a site. And it's not like I'm spending 25 seconds buying something on a site. I'm like going there to explore and discover and then transact. Whereas in one place I'm transacting, in the other place I'm sort of like existing, and neither am I purposely discovering. Like I go, like going to a, it's not happening anymore. I mean, you ever go to Dick's Sporting Goods? Right, like, but it's like, I mean, going to a Dick's Sporting Goods, it's like, I mean, like, I walk in there because my kids need something, and I walk out of there, was like, oh my god, I've discovered, like, it's like that's what you need, right? It's like you're opening the doors of the room, and it's like I didn't think I needed this, but it's like I'm sitting there and I'm virtually, or like, you know, you, there's that coming that takes us beyond where we are, which is less imaginative than like Chinese perhaps, and more known immersive. An experience that is not in existence.
So what do you think about like, you know, something like Amazon Live that is trying to combine together?
That's like it's like QVC. It's like, I mean, looking behind you, right? We're both in Manhattan, right? So you walk over, I think it was like on 30, I haven't walked by it lately, but on 34th Street. Like, now, I like the idea of walking by the street and seeing a person and a shopping, and it's cool, it's novel, but like novelty isn't what necessarily like sells. Novelty builds awareness. And so and you know, again, like I think Amazon's probably got a better shot than anybody to crack the code and has the resources and then the data. Finding people that have the trust, that have the charisma and the appeal, and putting them in an environment that is like semi-content based. So it's almost like reality TV. It's like semi-scripted. I think it's going to be that. But yeah, if I'm betting on anybody today, yeah, I'm betting on Amazon. But I don't want to. But I am.
Of course, you know. But then I just said, what you thought about that? Because I still see that it's not there yet, you know. And I also, you know, when you said about the trust and also being ready to be on camera and everything, another episode we talked about the difference of being an influencer, content creator, and a host. And not many people are good hosts. In terms of like live streaming, for example, especially in the US, while in China, you have basically academy where you can go there and you learn how to become a good host. I think that in the US, we're still missing someone that is very good at managing, like, you know, a live, for example, you know, for 2-3 hours. They are good in managing also like, you know, comments and all the lightings, all the stock, all the, you know, the inventory and everything. It's a hard job.
Yeah, I think that that's really well said. And I think you need a lot to make it happen, and you have to have the incentive first, right? So if I was sitting there today and be like, I'm gonna be a really cool daddy influencer, I mean, I'm just going to start like shooting video of myself with my kid. I mean, look at, you know, Barstool Sports pizza reviews, or look at all the things that kind of people get caught. That's what they're going to do. People want to, they don't want to sell. They want to build audience, and then they want to sell. It's like, oh, wait, all these people following me. I was listening to a podcast recently about Mr. Beast. I mean, fascinating. Like, guy just started making kind of, for lack of a better word, like moronic videos. Like, there's a video of him counting to 100,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like, right? And that's not about, like, that's not about building a brand or monetization. That's just about, like, you know, getting a following. And then it was like, wait a minute. And that's how I think people think. It's like, I mean, people, again, it's like, we don't think on this level. We're not thinking about commercial viability. We're thinking about awareness and, like, celebrity. Like, we are a culture that's obsessed with celebrity. And again, in China, like, obsessed with designer, obsessed with luxury. But I think that they are very trusting of certain types of people. Like, they've said, there's certain people that are really, really good at this in China. Mm-hmm. There's certain people that are not. And I don't think it's about going to a school and training. It's about, like, you, right? Yeah. It's like, we're doing this podcast. I mean, I'm obviously biased, but I think we're having a good conversation, right? We have a chemistry. Someone else could sit here and, like, you could be asking questions. So it's a little bit of that X factor. And what is the incentive today to, like, really sell? And that's your point, right? It's like, if I want to go home, like, wait a minute, I want to be an affiliate and I want to sell liquor. I don't know. Like, how am I going to do that? How am I going to get the camera? How am I going to get a studio? How am I going to get a space? How am I going to conduct commerce? There's a lot of barriers to entry, which I think goes back to then who invents that says, like, I'm going to get like a million people and put them in business as sort of the front end of an engine to be selling, and I'm going to be the back end, almost like in the old days, right? Like, you know, Michael Rubin at FedEx is like such a big deal. He was GSI Commerce, right? GSI Commerce was like turnkey internet. It's like, okay, you're a brand, give it to me. I'll do it all for you, and I want like 35%. So maybe it's something to that effect. It's like someone comes up with like have studios, they have all the things you need, and it's like, you're going to be the personality, you're going to get 10%, I'm going to get 30%, the brand's going to like get the balance, and the brand's going to acquire customers. And
fantastic, Nick. This was a very insightful, you know, conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us today.
Alessandro, this is really the highlight of my day. I loved our conversation. I hope I get to talk to you again. Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this was the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory, and I'll see you next week.